Colonel Travis, Davy Crockett, and 180 more. Captain Dickinson, Jim Bowie, present and accounted for. Back in 1836, Houston said to Travis, get some volunteers and go fortify the Alamo. Well, the men came from Texas and from old Tennessee, and they joined up with Travis just to fight for the right to be free.
Good morning, sweet, beautiful Texas. Of course, it has to be Marty Robbins, the Ballad of the Alamo, to get things started for us on this Texas Independence edition of the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show, presented by Lone Star Beer and Hoff Power Polaris. I'm your host, Cable Smith. So great to be here talking outdoors and all that implies with you fine folks. So y'all know the routine. Pour yourself another cup of coffee. Pull that stool a little closer to the old campfire because we've got a ton to get into today. And we'll start it off by talking whitetail management with renowned biologist and outdoor writer Jason Shipman. You've probably read plenty of his articles in Texas Trophy Hunter magazine. And today we'll discuss a very unique process known as Triple T, through which landowners can improve the genetics on their ranch. So cool stuff coming up there. After that, we check in with lifelong conservationist and hunter activist John Jackson regarding the issue of hunter harassment in this technologically driven world that we live in, where anti-hunters and their organizations now find it socially acceptable to make serious death threats on hunters and the hunting community via the internet. His organization, the Conservation Force, is currently drafting a publication for us hunters that sheds light on what recourse we have, because make no mistake about it, death threats, even over the internet, is a felony. So interesting stuff coming up there, to say the least. Then, if you recall, last week we got into Texas Parks and Wildlife's position on potential regulation changes that would affect Texas anglers and bow fishermen that specifically target alligator gar. This week, we'll get the other side of the story from members of the Texas Bow Fishing Association when guides Tony Reeves and Mark Malfa chime in with their thoughts and concerns based on what they see on the water on an almost daily basis. There's a big discrepancy between the number of alligator gar estimated by Texas Parks and Wildlife compared to what anglers and especially fishing guides say they see on an almost daily basis. So we'll try to get to the bottom of all that. It's going to be a great show. I'm certainly looking forward to it. A couple other things to mention here. Don't forget that the 12th annual Frostbank Sporting Clays Challenge is coming up April 12th. It's taking place at Elm Fork Shooting Sports in Dallas, Texas. It's a great event, and you get to shoot shotguns for an awesome cause. All the proceeds will go to benefit the children of Buckner Children's Homes. So many great kids are under the care of Buckner, and to be honest, they can't do it without the goodwill of other folks like you and I. So let's take care of those kids. Come out and shoot with us for a great cause on Saturday, April 12th. What else? Don't forget our Photo of the Month contest is going on right now. We've got another great prize lined up for March. Pretty cool deal here. Garmin just came out with a new camera that's competing with some of the other industry leaders. It's called the Garmin Verb. It's a point-of-view camera like the GoPro or whatever. But they've sent us one to give away as our grand prize for our March contest. So all you have to do, email me your best outdoor photo to LoneStarOutdoorShow@gmail.com for your chance to be entered into our March contest. And then our 12 monthly winners, don't forget, they will square off at the end of 2014 for a chance to join me on a trophy black buck or axis hunt down at Coons Canyon Ranch in Rock Springs, Texas, one of my absolute favorite places to visit and hunt in the entire state of Texas. Beautiful property, tons of elevation change, and they have got some monster axis deer and black bucks actually right now. So check them out at CoonsCanyonRanch.com and send us your best outdoor photo for a chance to be our 2014 Photo of the Year grand prize winner. What else? Let's do an Elite Archery giveaway right now. I've got an Elite Archery hat and t-shirt combo. I will send it out to the third person to text in the word archery. That's archery to 214-289-7807. Text in archery to 214-289-7807, and I'll send you an Elite Archery cap and t-shirt. Let's knock out a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by one of the most respected names in Texas whitetail deer management. Jason Shipman joins us. You're listening to Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show. I wanna go time travel.
through Texas, man. I'm on a good time traveling through Texas, man. Wanna be there to breathe the air, see all I can see. My Texas time traveling machine. Are you out there?
Hi, I'm Craig Boddington. I'd like to invite you to become a member of Dallas Safari Club, one of the world's leading hunting and conservation organizations. As a member, you'll receive Game Trails magazine, a monthly newsletter, and invitations to our monthly meetings and special activities. Join Dallas Safari Club, an international organization based in Dallas, supporting hunting and conservation worldwide. For more information, call 800-9-GO-HUNT or visit our website at www.biggame.org.
BioBore EB is the premier gasoline additive that combats the negative effects ethanol has on an engine. Its comprehensive formula is designed to protect marine engines and marine environments, yet also works great in all 2- and 4-stroke engines. It prevents phase separation and ethanol-related engine problems while stabilizing fuel for 18 months. BioBore's detergents also clean the entire fuel system of carbon and varnishes. BioBore EB has the best treat rate in the industry. 1 ounce treats an amazing 15 gallons of gas. Available at your local sporting goods store or visit BioBore.com today.
Howdy folks, I'm Lee Hoffbauer for Hoffbauer's Outdoor Superstore in Goldthwaite, Texas. We hope you love listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show, because we do, and we're proud to be a title sponsor. Now listen up, we here at Hoffbauer Outdoor Superstore have got some great deals for you folks that love the great outdoors. Whether you're needing a brand new Polaris ATV or maybe a Polaris Ranger to ride around, check your deer feeders, get to and from the deer blind, maybe to get you down to the dove patch, whatever your needs are, we can fix you up with a brand new Polaris today. Now we're also a New Holland tractor and equipment dealer. Now I'm just speculating, but maybe you need a new tractor and shredder to shred around your deer blinds, maybe clean up around deer camp, or maybe even shred a few lanes in the old sunflower patch. Now, we've got lots more than just Polaris and New Holland, so come check us out today, Hoffbauer's Outdoor Superstore in Goldthwaite, Texas. You can check us out on the web at hpolaris.com. Better yet, just come see us. Highway 84 West in Goldthwaite, Texas, and in Central Texas for over 48 years now. And folks, we couldn't have stuck around this long. We were steering you wrong.
Down on the old bio, raised on shrimps and catfish, mammy's good gumbo. I got the rambling fever, sent by the ma and pa. Cross that old Red River, this is what I saw. I saw miles and miles of Texas, all the stars up in the sky.
Miles and miles of Texas, some classic Asleep at the Wheel, bringing us back on the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show, presented by Lone Star Beer and Hoff Power Polaris. I'm your host, Cable Smith, by the way. Thank you so much for tuning in as we're about to talk whitetails with renowned biologist and outdoor writer Jason Shipman. But first, this segment of the show proudly brought to you by Cabela's, who for over 50 years has brought you legendary selection and service. Let expert outfitters show you all the newest hunting, fishing, and camping gear, as well as the best in authentic outdoor apparel and footwear at tough-to-beat prices. And you'll get free shipping when you shop online and ship your order to one of Cabela's three great Texas locations, Cabela's, world's foremost outfitter. Well, let's go ahead and welcome whitetail biologist Jason Shipman to the show. He's synonymous with growing big deer here in Texas. I had the pleasure of hunting with Jason a couple weekends ago, and to say I learned a lot about whitetail management would be a gross understatement. Anyway, we're thrilled about this new relationship and what Jason will add to our broadcast in the future. So, Jason, glad to have you on the show, man.
Yeah, it's good to be on the show with you today. Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Hey, the pleasure's all mine, man. And, you know, like I said, we had a great time on our MLD whitetail hunt at the beautiful Hogan Whitetail Retreat in Caldwell County. And, man, that Post Oak Savannah region is just absolutely gorgeous. Before we get into some of the interesting stuff that you and I talked about regarding whitetail management, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background as a biologist? Because I bet quite a few of them have read your articles in Texas Trophy Hunter magazine. And now that we'll be doing quarterly visits on whitetail management, you know, they can get to know you a little bit. So tell us about yourself.
Yes, sir. Well, I've been in the wildlife industry for 15 years. I'm a certified wildlife biologist and a private consultant, and I work primarily in the South and Central Texas areas with private landowners, and just work on management plans and permitting and surveys and just help them achieve their goals and improve their ranches and lands.
Well, obviously, you're a pretty humble individual because you've built a reputation as someone who knows how to grow and maintain a healthy whitetail herd, and a byproduct of that is giant bucks. And whether it's a high fence place like Hogan Whitetail Retreat or a low fence place like the Charco Murano Ranch of 7,000 acres in LaSalle County, which when you started working there 13 years ago, didn't have a decent buck on it. And now today, I mean, it's nothing for them to shoot bucks in the 190s and even over 200 inches every season.
Yes, sir. That's correct. You know, I've worked with places that are high and low fenced, and, you know, just with varying techniques along the way, and we've had good success, and working with deer programs are no doubt my specialty, my passion.
I would say so. That is definitely your specialty. Jason, you know, even the MLD season, which is what we were hunting under at Hogan Whitetail Retreat a couple weekends ago, that extended season has come and gone now as well. It ended last weekend. So people are starting to get out of hunting mode and really into project mode as far as whitetail management is concerned. So what are some of the things that you guys have going on right now?
Well, that's right. This is the time of year where we're trying to transition from hunting season into some of our larger scale projects, brush management practices, including roller chopping and aerial spraying. In addition, we've got several fencing and water projects that are about to get started. The month of February, we've been busy catching does under the authority of Triple T permits through Parks and Wildlife, and we'll continue to do so through the end of March.
Right, and let's hit on Triple T here. That's something that you and I talked a lot about while sitting in the blind the other day, and it's a program that I was familiar with but didn't really know all the details of it, and I feel like a lot of our listeners probably aren't aware of Triple T either, unless they own a ranch or have a very hands-on role in managing a ranch like yourself. But it is a fascinating process, and I'll let you go ahead and break it down for us.
Sure. The Triple T permit, basically it stands for trap, transport, transplant, and in essence, the permit allows excess animals to be captured and moved for, you know, restocking on another participating property. And the whitetail deer Triple T permit is most widely utilized. You can take the benefit of years of management off of one property, and landowners and managers routinely use Triple T permits to facilitate stocking excess does from these well-managed ranches and with great genetics and move them to other ranches with lower densities and wanting to improve their herds.
Okay, and just so everyone's on the same page here, you can actually capture does on a low fence property, move them to a high fence property, or vice versa if you really wanted to under the Triple T program.
Generally, most of the properties that utilize these permits are high fenced, just because of when releasing Triple T does, they, you know, being put into a new environment will range off the property if it's not fenced.
Okay, just so that everyone understands, a Triple T permit gives you the right or the ability to trap, transport, and transplant these deer, but you can't buy or sell them because they still are property of the state of Texas.
That's correct, yes, sir. You can be reimbursed for capture fees and expenses.
Sure. I mean, flying a helicopter isn't cheap.
And the requirements for the permitting are also expensive. It takes a lot of time to put a Triple T together from start to finish, including the approval and permitting process all the way through the capture and reporting process at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both trap and release sites have to have approved wildlife management plan on file with Parks and Wildlife, and as well as current survey data. And, you know, trap sites, they have to be approved and meet chronic wasting disease testing requirements. Release sites need approval as well, and they have to meet the criteria of being below carrying capacity and having habitat suitable to support additional animals.
Right.
So, you know, it is a you know, it there's quite a bit involved in putting one together. Mm-hmm. Additionally, all the requests have to be in by December the 31st, and you know, you have additional permit requirements for the capture, handling, and transporting, you know, of the animals. Utilizing a triple T, you can catch after the breeding season, like we're doing right now in February through the end of March, and move, you know, bred does from one approved site to another approved site under a permit, or you can move them prior to the breeding season, and you can move them into a DMP pen, a deer management permit pen, with an approved DMP permit. So basically, you could triple T those into a DMP pen, and then use a buck off of that property or from a breeder, either mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different options, and basically, you know, what I do is sit down with the landowner and go over the goals and how they want to get from point A to point B, and advise them of their options, and then we go from there.
Right, right. And something else that you told me that was very interesting is that if you want to triple T turkeys, pronghorn antelope, mule deer, you name it, there's a process for each one of those animals. I mean, they're not as popular, obviously, as white-tailed deer, but you can do that.
That's correct. That's correct. Most of them are handled on a case-by-case basis, but they are available, you know, additionally. So white-tailed deer are the most popular. It's the most numerous game animal mm-hmm. that we deal with and receives the most publicity. So naturally, it has the most widely utilized triple T permit that I'm aware of.
Well, Jason, that leads us to the obvious. Say there's a landowner out there or someone in whitetail management. Well, likely they already are aware of triple T, but you know, for anyone out there who wasn't familiar with it, say they want to take advantage of this opportunity, they can do so by visiting the Texas Parks and Wildlife website, or they can go to your website at jasonashipman.com. And the good thing about that is you already have a list of ranches that are already enrolled in the Triple T program that you can refer other landowners to. So that's pretty cool. And man, I tell you what, it was a great weekend hunting with you, man. And just being out there at Hogan Whitetail Retreat, my goodness, some of those yearlings just had me salivating. And you've implemented your management plan out there, and the proof's in the pudding. You know what you're doing, buddy.
Well, I appreciate it, and enjoyed the hunt, and it's been a great project working out there at Hogan Wilderness Retreat, and we're really excited about the future of the deer herd out there on that property. It's been a great project, and it's just the process takes time, and we're getting there. We're excited about it.
Well, hey, Jason, we are certainly looking forward to this new relationship and the educational aspect of whitetail management that you can bring to the show. Thanks again for your time today, and we look forward to your next piece in Texas Trophy Hunter Magazine.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on the show, Cable.
We'll talk to you soon, bud.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right. There he goes, whitetail biologist Jason Shipman. That segment, by the way, proudly brought to you by Sendero Seed Company, Texas' premier seed company. They've got anything and everything you need to keep your whitetail herd happy and healthy, including the Dr. Deer-backed buck forage oats. Give my buddy Rob Hughes a call at 1-877-610-SEED today, or check them out at senderoseed.com. Sendero Seed Company, for all your planting needs. Let's knock out a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into a new age of hunter harassment, as there's a bunch of internet tough guys and gals who routinely issue death threats to not only hunters, but their friends and families as well. And we'll find out what recourse we have as hunters. We'll do so with Louisiana attorney John Jackson. He's a former Safari Club International president and founder of the Conservation Force. And we'll get into all that next. You're listening to Cabela's Lone Star Outdoors Show.
Let us take off our hats to our brothers in arms and the chances that they never had. We are blessed
and the bounty of Texas tonight. Let us drink to those who marched that road to Goliad.
Rockwall Gun Club is North Texas' premier shooting facility, offering both indoor and outdoor ranges, including a unique 500-yard rifle range. If shotgunning's your thing, then check out the 18-station clay course. Opening summer 2014, Rockwall Gun Club is offering special introductory, family, and corporate membership rates for founding members. Located at 15950 State Highway 205, you can also visit rockwallgunclub.com or call 972-215-6902. Rockwall Gun Club, the private shooting experience.
At Frost, we could talk to you about our 24/7 online banking. Or we could talk to you about our more than 1,100 ATMs across Texas. We can even talk to you about our mobile banking app that lets you pay bills, transfer funds, and deposit checks from anywhere. But at the end of the day, there's nothing we enjoy more than to just talk to you.
Thank you for calling Frost. How may I help you?
We're here with the technology and convenience you want and the service you deserve. Frost. Banking, investments, insurance.
Howdy outdoorsmen, whether you're looking for the ideal place to customize your everyday truck or your ranch 4x4, Lone Star Conversions can do it all. Specializing in custom Jeeps, trucks, exterior liners, spray and bed liners, lift kits, bumpers, and lights, it's our purpose to provide customers with the most unique, best valued conversions anywhere. Stop in and see us at our convenient location off of Highway 380 in Denton or call us at 940-484-5500. Of course, you can also check us out at LoneStarJeeps.com.
Larson Electronics is a Texas-based lighting company that's been outfitting the United States military since the 1960s, and while they continue to support our troops, they also now have over 200 lights ideal for your hunting and fishing needs, like the 35-watt HID Camouflage Go Light Striker with remote that's 15 million candle power in the palm of your hand. Ideal for predator and hog hunting, they also have remote-controlled floodlights, feeder lights, and LED boat lights. Visit LarsonElectronics.com and go Texan with Larson Electronics for all your lighting needs.
You wouldn't take a mule to the Kentucky Derby, and you wouldn't go swimming with your boots on. So why do folks wear mossy green camo to hunt the Great Southwest? Game Guard Camouflage is celebrating 10 years of putting hunters undercover in the rugged Texas terrain. Owner Craig Smith invites you to visit a dealer near you to check out the full line of hunting apparel, caps, bags, coolers, gun cases, dove hunting belts, and the newly designed microfiber shirts. Available in 13 different colors. So whether you're hunting, camping, fishing, or just enjoying the great outdoors, Game Guard has you covered. Visit GameGuard.net to find a dealer near you or call 888-381-4263. Game Guard, the official camo of the Lone Star Outdoors Show.
Hi, this is Ted Cruz. Thanks for listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
Will you ask me what I like about Texas? I tell you it's so wide open spaces. It's everything between the Sabine and the Rio Grande. It's the Llano Estacado. It's the Brazos and the Colorado. It's the spirit of the people, that's y'all, who share this land.
That's the music of Gary P. Nunn bringing us back on Cabela's Lone Star Outdoors Show. What I Like About Texas is the name of that one. Thanks to our presenting sponsors, by the way, Lone Star Beer and Hoff Power Polaris. I'm your host, Cable Smith. Thank you for joining me as we celebrate Texas independence this weekend. And we're actually about to get into a new breed of anti-hunters here in a second who will stoop as low as to wish death threats on you and your family and friends. But first, this segment of the show, proudly brought to you by Lone Star Beer. My favorite way to celebrate a great day of field or on the water is with an ice cold Lone Star Beer. Remember to drink responsibly when you celebrate with Lone Star Beer. Lone Star Beer, the national beer of Texas. Well, before we move on here and introduce our next guest, I wanted to tell you fine folks out there that we actually had our first death wish sent our way on our Facebook page this past week. An anti-hunter posted that she wished death and suffering on me, my family, and loved ones. And the timing of this poor display of humanity, which you can actually read in full right there on our Facebook page, it actually ties right into our next topic this morning. And so here to get into this new age of hunter harassment, it's my pleasure to welcome lifelong conservationist. He's also an attorney, former president of Safari Club International, And he's also the founder of Conservation Force. Mr. John Jackson, thanks for dropping in.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
You bet. And before we get into today's topic of discussion, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself leading up to the creation of Conservation Force? I know y'all are celebrating nearly 20 years of activism, being out there on the front lines.
Yeah, I'm a lawyer and a hunter and a naturalist. I've been a nature lover since I was a child. And Conservation Force is in its 19th year, and it's an association of over 200 hunting organizations, and we kind of spearhead their efforts jointly. Before Conservation Force, I was the president of Safari Club International and headed their governmental affairs and conservation programs for about 10 years. I've been doing this for about 30 years as a public service.
Well, we certainly appreciate a lifetime of dedication for hunter rights and conservation alike. And, you know, I actually came across your name. I was reading a recent feature by Connor Harrison in Lone Star Outdoor News, and the piece was focusing on hunter harassment, which has always been an issue, but now with the internet and technology, it's becoming more and more prevalent, so much so that our friend Corey Knowlton, who bought the Black Rhino hunt, a much-publicized hunt, by the way, at the Dallas Safari Club auction, he received death threats so severe that the FBI got involved and even had to post up at his house.
Yeah, that is correct. This is not new. What's new about it is the internet. People are quick to send out messages that are everything from being just rude to death threats. And it's not unique to the hunting community. In a few days, you'll see an article about the chief of police someplace being threatened by the internet to... I see there was somebody reported a black bear in the neighborhood in Northwest, and the authorities disposed of it, and they got death threats.
Oh, yeah, I know firsthand. We got our first death wish for not only just death, but suffering as well for myself, my family, and my loved ones this past week.
It goes with the territory today. It's the nature of the internet. People have always been rude people, but now they have a vehicle in a large mass way.
Oh, yeah. And this past week, coming from Washington State, there was a big uproar regarding a 11-year-old girl who shot and killed a mountain lion that was stalking her 13-year-old brother. And you read some of the comments on the internet posted by these anti-hunters, and it's just amazing that they ridicule this girl and put more value on that cougar's life than that of a human child. The hypocrisy blows my mind, and it's absolutely asinine, the mindset that these people have.
They're ignorant, literally, and some people are affected by Disneyism. It's out of touch, and that wouldn't be relevant, frankly, because they don't pay the bills. They're not the stewards of wildlife. They're not saving the habitat. They're not paying for the law enforcement. They're not the research or the management. They're not doing any of that. The internet gives them access to opinionate and send hate mail. And it's just the nature of the beast today.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And look, John, I know you're an attorney. Part of the reason why you founded Conservation Force was to help hunters with their rights. It seems like a lot of these death threats, folks turn a blind eye towards them when they're made at the expense of hunters. So what rights do we have when people threaten our lives on the internet?
We're actually working on that right now. We're talk with Safari Press, and we're going to publish a manual for lawyers and laymen, both how to protect themselves and today, for those with sporting interests, because you can't make a decision that's, no matter how good or constructive it is, the Black Rhino sale being an example, without this bombardment of hate mail, or worse, you know, actual death threats. So there's, for example, as a federal law, that to threaten someone with bodily harm over the internet is a felony. It's a 5 years imprisonment. It's got to be a real threat, you know, something that would put an ordinary person on notice or give him reason to believe that it's sincere, you know. And this book will go into the cases under that. And there's also civil remedies that have existed for thousands of years where someone makes a representation against about you or against you that's not true and does so maliciously. An example of that is where an animal rights organization might coach people at the annual conventions, conferences, how to harm people that they disagree with, how to misrepresent it, and call for action against the person. It might interfere with his business contracts, which is a breach of law. It might just be simple defamation, where it's a misrepresentation with the purpose of hurting the person maliciously.
Mm-hmm.
You have a civil right action for those. Of course, there's also most states have honor harassment laws, but generally they'll only apply to interference during the act of the hunt, in sales or auctions, for example, that we had in the Black Rhino incident.
Yeah, and it was well documented that they had some protesters out at the Dallas Safari Club convention. I stopped them on my way out on Saturday night before the Black Rhino auction, and got a comment from them as far as what their goal was, and they said they just wanted whoever purchased the hunt to donate that money to conservation and not remove this bull from the herd. The thing is that they don't understand is that rhino had already been selected by the Namibia government to be killed. It was a problem bull. So it was going to be taken out of the herd regardless. This way, at least $350,000 was raised that goes back into funding for that species. I mean, the Namibia government just announced this past week, I read a press release where they're going to use the funding that they raised from that auction to help prevent poaching of the black rhino. I mean, give me a break. And because of all of the hate mail, death threats, and negativity that not only Dallas Safari Club received prior to the auction, but also potential bidders, they expected this auction to go a lot higher, which would have raised more money for the black rhino.
That is correct. I mean, the Reynolds instance is a perfect example. There was all the money was going to is dedicated to a special fund. It's a public fund in the country of Namibia for rhino conservation. They certainly need it. They have a very successful program, the most successful around, but it's got to be funded, of course. And the rhino selected, or surplus rhino, the population's growing at the rate of 5% per year, but they get old, they get dangerous, and they have to be removed. And the removal of these old, bad boy males actually increases the population growth rate and the local tolerance of the animal, and generates revenue. It's a sustainable system, self-perpetuating. It's the ideal, and the foremost authorities in the world were behind it, and are behind it. The rhino's got to be removed. So why not have someone pay for it?
Right.
It's pretty fundamental. But the as far as wildlife management goes, it was the right thing to do. It is the right thing to do. It's going to happen. You know, 177 nations of CITES have voted for this and created a quota of 5. They've been taking these rhino. We finally can import them in the United States. Therefore, we try to auction it off at Dallas Safari Club, and we were hoping to raise $1 million. There were people in line to pay $1 million for the good of the cause. With all the hate mail and whatnot, there was little reward in that. It was best just to spend your money on some other cause.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. It was sold much lower, and therefore there's more rhino are going to have to be taken than normally would. They have a quota of up to 5, and they've never used it. This year, they're probably going to have to sell an extra rhino or 2 because that rhino went low.
Right.
So the animal rights groups, say ignorant public, that were opposed to this and just in principle, actually caused the loss of or the removal of an extra rhino or 2.
Well, I hope that the anti-hunters and animal rights activists are all patting each other on the back now, that they're responsible and have the blood on their hands of another rhino that didn't have to be harvested this year.
Yeah, it's absolutely necessary. The sportsman is a conservation paradigm and has been for over 110 years, and all management authorities recognize that. People that are suffering from Disneyism or displaying ignorance, they just jump to conclusions. They shouldn't even be relevant. Their opinions shouldn't be relevant. That's why we have to learn how to deal with this.
Yeah, and I know that you have a long history as far as legalizing the importation of some specific trophies taken around the world back into the United States.
I've been involved in so long. I was involved with the importation of elephants when we first established that, and it's so important to conservation. And I got death threats then. A smaller scale. It wasn't hundreds of people. It was dozens, although they were very, very offensive and worse. And then when I established the import of polar bears, middle 90s, I got death threats again. And rhino. Rhino, well, World Wildlife Fund came to me in the middle 90s and asked me if we could help get sportsmen to remove to go on darting safaris and remove the horn of black rhino in Zimbabwe. But we had to do something with the horn. That would save them from poaching. But what would you do with the horn? It could fall in the wrong hands. So the best thing to do was to import it in the United States and end up being a trophy on someone's wall or a safety deposit box, but it couldn't be traded any further. So we did that, and we succeeded with it. And I got death threats then. We literally saved the rhino in the country of Zimbabwe with this action. You wouldn't believe the death threats I got then. Still, all that was faxes and postal mail. Today, that would turn into hundreds, if not thousands, or even millions of emails of organized offensive behavior by with animal rights groups, organizations that really don't contribute. They just rabble-rouse in the background.
Oh, they inflict devastating damage on their cause without even knowing it. I mean, like you just said, you were instrumental in allowing U.S. hunters to bring their trophies, whether it was elephant, polar bear, or a black rhino horn from a darting safari back into the United States. And it was those price tags put on those trophy hunts that helped fund the programs needed to save those species. Anyway, we could go on for days, John. But moving on here, the publication that you and your team of attorneys at Conservation Force are working on as far as protecting hunters from harassment, death threats, defamation, and the like, when do you expect that document to be available to hunters and other attorneys as well?
Yeah, we hope to have it out by summer. Yeah, and the Safari Press would publish it. It's the extent of it I'm not sure of yet because, like I say, there's more than your legal rights and remedies. I think we need to have an understanding that there's going to be a conflict of appreciation about the advantages of sustainable use and the nature of it. The user-pay system in America that saved our own wildlife and our habitat. There's a great deal of the public doesn't understand that. It's counterintuitive to them that you duck hunters kill ducks. That we have more ducks now than we had 25 years ago and more whitetail than we had 25 years ago. And it's because of the hunting, and that hunting is an authentic, natural experience. And the hunters are stewards, and they're incentivized to save wildlife and habitat and pay more for all wildlife than everybody else in society combined. Just game animals, but non-game animals, because we pay for the whole system. I've learned, because I've been through this for over 20 years as a leader of the hunting community, that dogs that bark don't bite. I've yet to be harmed, but I certainly have been threatened on a routine basis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm perceived to be the bad guy when I'm actually the hero. And that's like Corey. He paid $350,000, and when he could have just gone to Namibia and bought it for $175,000.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have bought two rhino for the price of that one. It was for the good of the cause that he invested in the conservation of that species and at an auction, which is a traditional way for the hunting community to raise money for conservation that benefits everyone.
Yeah, and Corey's situation with the black rhino is a prime example. But, you know, Ducks Unlimited, they raise over $75 million annually with 1,000-plus auctions each year. Wild Sheep Foundation, same thing. Dallas Safari Club, SCI, Wild Turkey Federation, Pheasants Forever. I mean, the list is endless.
And the examples go on and on and on. The hunters are the heroes. We know that. The general public needs to be kept informed of that. but yeah. You're always going to have a certain percentage of people that just jump to conclusions and have no appetite whatsoever for sustainable use. They associate their animals with Walt Disney and with their pets. This is game. This is wildlife. And it exists and will always exist as long as there's hunting.
Yes, indeed, John. And we certainly appreciate Conservation Force, you guys taking the initiative to come up with a publication that will protect hunters as far as listing our rights, because it is important. There are a lot of crazy people out there, as I found out firsthand this week when some lady on Facebook wished a painful, suffering death to me, my family, and my friends. It's really just a sick mental state that these people exhibit. But anyway, thanks again for all you guys are doing and for 30-plus years as a leader in the hunting and conservation community. We certainly appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. Thank you. Anytime.
So there he goes. Conservation Forces founder John Jackson, a great organization. They've been doing this for a very long time. And if you want to check out this great organization and their role and influence within the hunting community, you can do so at conservationforce.org. That segment proudly brought to you by Rudy's Barbecue, where you can stop in for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, including the newest Rudy's in front of the Cabela's in Allen, Texas. Rudy's True Texas Style Barbecue. Coming up next, we revisit the always controversial alligator gar fishery that we got into last week. This time, we'll take a look at it from the other side of the fence. You're listening to Cabela's Lone Star Outdoors Show.
I love the USA and the other states. They're okay. Texas is the place I want to be, and I don't care if I ever go to Delaware anyway. Cause we got Stubbs and Greenhall and Antone's and John T's Country Store. We got Willie and Jack and Jack, Robert Earl, Pat, Corey, Charlie, man, so many more.
Did you know there's a bank that will pay you to be its customer? That's right, Lone Star Ag Credit is a cooperative, and since it's owned by its stockholders, pays millions in dividends each year. That's free money to every borrower. Lone Star Ag Credit serves people all over Northeast Texas, assuring you competitive interest rates on real estate loans, rural home loans, livestock and farm and ranch loans. Contact Lone Star Ag Credit today at 800-530-1252 or on the web at lonestaragcredit.com. Equal housing lender.
Hey friends, Cable Smith here for DFW Safes. We all know that our guns are a big part of our lives, from grandfather's old 12-gauge to that trusty tack driver of a deer rifle. And DFW Safes is North Texas' premier safe dealer, specializing in Rhino, Bighorn, Huntsman, Heritage, and Fortress safes, to name a few. They're family-owned and operated and have over 24 years' experience in the safe and installation business. They even have commercial safes for your business and scratch and dent safes for the most frugal of gun owners. Visit dfwsafes.com to set up your delivery today. That's dfwsafes.com or call 817-715-1068.
At LSC Trailer Sales, we offer a full line of utility trailers, from small single axle trailers to heavy equipment trailers, ATV trailers, car haulers, landscape trailers, cargo trailers, truck beds, and more. We can special order a custom trailer specific to your needs and have the ability to customize standard models in-house. LSC Trailer Sales is here to assist you with any questions you might have about trailers. Call 940-484-5500 or visit us at lsctrailersales.com. Finally, quality trailers at affordable prices in Dallas-Fort Worth.
Hey y'all, Cable Smith here for Tioga Retrievers. As bird hunters, we expect the most out of our gun dogs. And that's why I sent my sweet girl Belle to Angie and Tim Becker at Tioga Retrievers. Not only were her manners and obedience spot on in the blind and in the field, but Belle picked up over 200 birds in her first season. So whether you want a well-rounded hunting dog or just a well-mannered companion for the home, Tioga Retrievers has you covered. Located in Aubrey, Texas, visit TiogaRetrievers.com. That's T-I-O-G-A Retrievers.com.
Coons Canyon Ranch in Rock Springs, Texas specializes in exotics such as axis deer and black buck. Coons Canyon offers quality animals at a price the working man can afford. Right now, save 10% on any package of multiple animals. Military personnel, police, and firefighters also get 10% off. Lodging is available upon request, as are other exotic species. Visit CoonsCanyonRanch.com for your next exotic trophy hunt. That's CoonsCanyonRanch.com.
By phone in suit and tie, he fights traffic in his Mercedes. Put on his cowboy boots, then he climbs aboard his pickup truck and barrels on out of the shoe.
Dallas Days and Fort Worth Nights, one of my favorites from the late, great Chris Ledoux, bringing us back on Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show as we celebrate Texas independence this weekend. I'm Cable Smith, thanking everybody for tuning in to this morning's presentation. This segment of the show proudly brought to you by Squaw Mountain Trophy Hunts in Jacksboro, Texas. I had the opportunity to harvest a beautiful Scimitar Horned Oryx bull out there this last weekend, and let me tell you, what an amazing place. 2,000 acres of elevation changes with a renovated lodge, beautiful cabins, a five-star chef. I mean, they've got the whole package. Oh, and the exotics, they're not bad either. I even took Aaron and Henry out there, so it was a family affair. They had a blast as well. So I highly recommend that you visit SquawMountainTrophyHunts.com to book your next exotic hunt. Now, moving along here, if you recall, last weekend we interviewed Texas Parks and Wildlife's Dave Terry of the Inland Fisheries Division. We got into some proposed regulation changes for our alligator gar fishery that would make it illegal for bow fishermen specifically to harvest gar when conditions are ideal for spawning. So this week, after hearing some staunch opposition from bow fishermen all over the state, I thought we'd interview a couple of them to get their side of the story on why they feel TPWD's proposals are misguided and unnecessary. Texas Parks and Wildlife has been doing some serious research on the species since 2009. Tony Reeves has been working hand in hand with Texas Parks and Wildlife, and he's also a member of the Texas Bow Fishing Association. He joins us now. Tony, thanks for dropping in, man.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
It's our pleasure. And I guess, first of all, a little bit about you. You guide bow fishing trips on Lake Palestine primarily. I've been doing it for a while now. And, you know, you've also been working hand-in-hand with Texas Parks and Wildlife as far as their alligator gar research goes. You provide them stats as far as the number of bow fishermen that are out there, y'all's tournament results. Y'all will turn in fish from those tournaments if Texas Parks and Wildlife wants them. So anyway, you know, you're kind of on the front lines, and you're well aware of the new proposed regulation changes that, if passed, would make it illegal to bow fish for alligator gar when ideal spawning situations occur. Just kind of seems kind of gray and a little convoluted as far as when those situations are, because nobody really knows. It's totally based on rainfall.
Right. The thing about that is nobody really knows. You know, you can't really predict when that's going to be. The word I'm getting from our members that actually participate pretty heavily in the alligator gar harvest, you know, even they can't predict it ideally. You know, you try to hit around some good ideas of what you think it's going to be and then get out there and try to find it. But I think the pictures they talk about seeing, you know, where they're all stacked up, that's a very rare sight, even for the guys that are out there, you know, once, twice a week.
Right, right. Well, you know as well as I do, Tony, that Texas and then, you know, Louisiana to a lesser extent are really the last remaining holdouts for trophy alligator gar fishing for one reason or another. Other states, their fisheries just aren't there anymore. Here in Texas, that's not the case. And Dave Terry, you know, Texas Parks and Wildlife is very concerned about this fishery, and they want to make sure it's not overfished. The number that they threw out as far as ideal annual harvest is 5% or less of the alligator gar population. Now, you would contend that we're not reaching anywhere near that level of harvest.
You know, the papers I've seen published by Parks and Wildlife, they were saying, what's the number, 9,600 or something like, and that's a stretch of river on the Trinity alone from Dallas-Fort Worth to Livingston. Mm-hmm. And that 5% was basically, what, 400 fish, and we could take, you know, up to 400, which is 5% of the population. And that's just in that stretch. That doesn't consider, you know, the Brazos River, Sabine River, other smaller river systems, and different stretches of those rivers.
Right.
So to put stipulations based on one section of river and one number, to us, just doesn't make any logical sense.
And does that seem like an extremely conservative estimated population? I mean, 9,600 fish in a stretch of river that's hundreds of miles long?
Yes, and it does. And that's the word we're getting from our members, like I said, that actively fish for this species. Pretty technical sport. I mean, it's not something you just go out and do and bag an alligator gar the first day. I mean, I've got over 60 hours in one myself and still haven't taken one. You know, that's just off and on going when I'm able to.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys that have done it for years and years and years have gotten pretty consistent at taking them, but even then, you know, with the one a day now, they're out there hunting. They might go all day without taking one.
Yeah.
But the numbers I'm getting from these guys are saying that there's incredibly more alligator gar than these numbers are reflecting.
Yeah, and so 400 fish, you know, as the target harvest maximum in that stretch of river, that's not a lot of fish, and especially when you consider that that includes harvest from rod and reel anglers as well. And to be honest, that's quite a bit easier than bow fishing for them.
That's true, but most of those guys, I would typically say most of those guys are releasing those fish.
Well, Tony, I'm going to play the devil's advocate here and just talk about, you know, a legitimate fear of Texas parks and wildlife, and that is, you know, the fact that bow fishing is increasing in popularity. We see it more and more often on television, and you know, but that doesn't really coincide with what you see numbers-wise as far as Texas Bow Fishing Association's membership and then the number of folks turning out for your tournaments.
Yeah, a few years back, I was a points chairman as well as a vice president and regional board member. So I was collecting all the points from all the tournaments across the state of Texas. So when we got in the tournament roster, we had to go through and assign points for TBA members only. And at that point in time, about 25% of our members were actually shooting the tournament. So if you had a 100-member tournament, only 25% of those were actually Texas Bow Fishing Association members. So based on that, we can see that, you know, with lower numbers going down, say at one time we said, 250 members? And if that was a 0.25% of the population that bow fished, what would that be, 1,000 members bow fishing?
Mm-hmm.
And that's actively fishing in tournaments. Now, obviously, not everybody fishes tournaments. So now that we're down to 150, 200, you can see that the population, if it stayed at 25% of members shooting tournaments, then that number would be lower.
Right, right. So,
and we also know, too, that there's a high turnover rate because bow fishing itself, even in the years I've been involved, it's got hills and valleys. You know, it'll get popular, then it'll go down low and then come back up, and the same thing in the tournament scene of bow fishing.
Mm-hmm.
So you got guys that'll get in, they'll stay active for a year or two, and then they'll find another hobby. I mean, a guy I work with as a coworker, you know, he and I kind of started tournament fishing together. Well, he's already changed hobbies. He and I shoot an IDPA, and I'm the only one still bow fishing. So as you get new guys in, you're also losing the old guys. But nobody's reporting on that. So all they see is the new guys coming in and showing up on TV and this and that. They don't see the guys that aren't fishing anymore.
Well, Tony, something else to hit on here. I'm not aware of any statistics that show the percentage of harvest from rod and reel guys compared to the bow fishermen out there. And while my bow fishing experience is pretty limited, I love it, but haven't done it very much, I can see that it'd be a lot easier to catch a gar on a rod and reel than trying to shoot a big rolling alligator gar on the surface.
You put a big bait out there, it's easier to catch an alligator gar on hook and line than it is to bow fish one, you know, just because, you know, you got to catch that gar that rolls up in a shootable distance. You know, you can go out on the river and watch gar roll all day, but to find one that rolls within that 5-yard window there and then be able to, you know, get a bow drawn back and get a nice clean shot off, it's just harder to do. You know, people think it's like shooting in a barrel, and that may be a case at times for a, you know, spawning needle nose or even spawning carp, but rolling gator gar, that's not the case.
Yeah.
You better be on your toes, and you know, you can't take a break and get a sip of Coca-Cola or grab a cracker, because I guarantee you that gator gar is going to go roll right at the boat at that time you take a sip of Dr. Pepper.
Oh, yeah. It's like going to take a leak while you're duck hunting. Every time, you know, as soon as you get those waders pulled down, here come the ducks.
It's an active hunt. I mean, you've got to actively stay at it for hours on end. You can camp out on alligator gar all day and never have him roll in the right range.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, my experience is limited. I've only fished with Nocturnal Adventures and Aaron Haddock up there on Lake Texoma. But we were trying to shoot rolling gator gar, and it happened so fast. I mean, they hit the surface, and boom, they're gone. So you got to be ready, have your bow pretty much drawn if you're going to get a shot at one.
You might not catch him roll that close again all day long.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would think, you know, there's not many lakes in my immediate area that hold alligator gar. You know, there's some on Rayburn, Toledo Bend, and like you said, Texoma. And I know Aaron Haddock fishes up there, but I know when they spawn up there, they may be a little bit more easier than in a deep river system, you know. But even then, to actually come across an actual spawn in shallow water, it's rare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very few people have seen that.
Well, Tony, right or wrong, I think Texas Parks and Wildlife, honestly, I think they have good intentions. You know, I know a lot of bow fishermen out there feel that they haven't been given a fair shake, and a lot of that stems back from 5 years ago when the first regulations were implemented, and I totally understand that as well.
5 years ago, you know, we were in basically the same fight. We were going from an unlimited take of alligator gar to, at that time, they proposed to shut it down completely, and we were able to get or retain at least the one a day. You know, it could have went to a one per season, or it could have went to shutting down completely. So we fought and fought and fought, and we kind of seen it was coming. It's almost like gun control. You know, you give an inch, and then the next year they want another inch, and then the next year it's on and on and on and on. So that's kind of where we're at. We fought it, and within the past 5 years, we've helped them study this species. And then this is kind of the things we get back from the commission for helping them is more regulation. They had even admitted 5 years ago that they didn't have any accurate data on this species. You know, the data they had were coming out of Louisiana from Elise Ferrara. Well, since then, they actually had 5 years to study it. You know, we see their data. We don't agree with it. We think there's more alligator gar than what they're saying. But that's beside the point. 5 years, you know, I don't believe after shutting down a commercial fishery has been enough time to see what the population grows.
Well, and we all know what Texas Parks and Wildlife is going to say. Just from our interview with Dave last week, they're going to agree with you and say, we don't know a lot about the fish, so we're going to err on the side of caution and conservation. We're going to be proactive and try to protect this fishery.
And I agree with that, but you know, we've offered our commissioners and other biologists, and a few have taken us up on offers to go out and actually fish or even just go out on a boat and see the numbers that we see. You know, we look at their studies and we see them going out with rod and reel guys, and we're going, well, wait a minute, y'all ain't even in the right area. You know, to be fishing at the lower Trinity when we all know that the upper Trinity is, you know, different or a different time of year than they're trying to catch or do captures, you know, we would just like to take more of them out and continue helping them, but we want them to see what we see on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis, you know.
Right.
We turn in fish for them, which basically they take the head and take the odorless bone out. But, you know, we want to get them on the boats during the day when these fish are actually rolling and we can count them and show them how much there is in a one-mile stretch or a five-mile stretch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even just run up river and drift down and count the number of alligator gar rolling. Because, like I said, from my members, they're telling me that there's way more than the 9,200 or 9,600, they say, in that stretch of river.
Well, Tony, we certainly appreciate your time today, man. We do need to take a break here because we've got another bow fishing guide, Mark Malfa, lined up. He fishes on that stretch of the Trinity River basically, oh gosh, maybe 200 days a year. And we want to find out what he sees and what he thinks. Now, if people want to check out your Facebook page, they can do so at Good and Ready Bow Fishing. And then also, of course, if you want to get involved with the Texas Bow Fishing Association, you can do so by visiting TexasBowFishingAssociation.com. Thanks again for your time today, as we certainly appreciate the insight.
Thank you, Cable, and I appreciate your time.
All right, there he goes, Tony Reeves. Let's take a break, come back, and we'll check in with Big Fish Bow Fishing Texas Captain Mark Malfa and get his thoughts on the alligator gar issue as well. You're listening to Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show.
If they don't, just let me go to Texas. Texas is as close as I've been.
Do you have a hog problem at your ranch or deer lease? We have the solution. The System Hog Trap comes in two sizes, 17-foot and 30-foot diameter traps. After you trap the hogs, take the top section off the trap and use it for another feeder site to keep the hogs away from the feeder. The system is both a trap and a deer food plot fence. That way you don't waste your money on just a hog trap. Call 940-391-3669 or visit www.goinfencing.com. That's goinfencing.com.
Hey, North Texas sports fans, this is Brian Spagnola, General Manager of Texas Motor Cars in Addison. My family's been in the car business for over 50 years, and I want to show you the difference in buying from a family-owned and operated business. TexasMotorCars.com is an awesome website that lets you do virtually all of your shopping online. We have a professional photographer that takes amazing photos, and we give you all the information that you'll need up front.
You can even find out how much we will give you for your trade-in before you ever come in. I take pride in the fact you can come in, choose a car, and be out in less than an hour. We have financing rates starting at 1.79% on pre-owned vehicles and can help almost anybody. Please do yourself a favor. If you're in the market for a pre-owned vehicle of any kind, give us a shot. Let me show you how easy buying a vehicle should be. Visit TexasMotorCars.com or come visit our 20,000 square foot indoor showroom in Addison. Again, visit TexasMotorCars.com or call us at 1-888-9-TX-MOTORS.
The new Bobcat utility vehicle is here at Bobcat of Dallas and Fort Worth, and it's hungry. Get ready to work like an animal and love it. Powerful, ultra-comfortable, and sure-footed, this lineup of vehicles delivers legendary Bobcat performance, so you can sink your teeth into a wide range of jobs. With twice the horsepower, 1,850 pounds of payload capacity, and four-wheel independent suspension, you will love it. Stop in at Bobcat of Dallas and Fort Worth to see for yourself.
Hey, everybody, this is Pat Green. You're listening to my good buddy Cable Smith right here on the Lone Star Outdoor Show. Check it out, y'all.
Now September, gone to Texas. Just one time every year. So we get our guns and a pickup trucks and a bunch of that Lone Star beer. Head out for the moving plane with birds that blow like wine.
That's our buddy Pat Green's West Texas Holiday, bringing us back on the Texas Independence edition of the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show, presented by Lone Star Beer and Hoff Power Polaris. I'm Cable Smith, and we are continuing our discussion on Texas' very unique trophy alligator gar fishery this morning. But before we introduce our next guest, this segment proudly brought to you by STI Guns. Texas made and Texas proud. Visit STIGuns.com for your next handgun purchase. Well, let's go ahead and jump back into it here. Our next guest is the owner and operator of Big Bow Fishing Texas. It's my pleasure to welcome Captain Mark Malfa to the show.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it. Thanks for having me.
Well, Captain Mark, you told me off the air that you're on the water nearly 200 days a year, rod and reel fishing for alligator gar, as well as bow fishing for any legal species. So my first question is, about how many alligator gar would you say are harvested on your trips annually?
Oh my gosh, that's I've never put the pencil to it. I never have.
But one a trip, more than more or less, or
you know, honestly, on the bow fishing trips, we see them. Clients shoot them, that means they have to hit them. So I would say we do not get one a trip on alligator on the gar bow fishing trips. Sometimes we get, you know, everybody gets their limit, but not very often. And sometimes they'll get any and all. But on the rod and reel trips, we'll catch, oh gosh, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 a day.
Oh wow.
You know, we catch them and let them go.
Uh-huh.
And the bow fishing, the reason why I'm not saying we're not getting them on bow fishing, because clients just miss them. I mean, you're talking about the easiest shot in the world, and they miss them. The backs are out of the water, laying on top. They're literally directly a foot or two in front of the boat, and I'll have 1, 2, 3 guys all miss the same fish at once. Happens all the time, and that's your best case scenario.
Well, it's not the easiest skill to master, you know, especially for newbies when you're dealing with that refraction, trying to figure out exactly where that fish is below the surface. But man, if their backs are out of the water, that's a little different.
Sure. I've had the guy that's never even picked up a boat before hit an alligator gar on the first shot. It's like you need to sit down right now and keep your average where it's at because it's about to drop.
Uh-huh.
So I've had every area of the rainbow as far as, you know, covering the gamut of possibilities happen. So yeah, and we see them 100% of the time. I mean, 100% of the time of the trips, we'll see multiple alligator gar.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes, you know, dozens upon even hundreds on occasion, but we always see alligator gar on the trips. But you know, you got to hit them. I tell people it's not high fence bow fishing.
Okay, and so where do you fish predominantly, as far as what area?
You know, I kind of fish all around the state. I kind of go to where I think the gar is the best opportunity for my client to get a big trophy alligator gar, whether it be with rod or bow and arrow. I do fish in East Texas, not so much way out, you know, northeast, but pretty much I go to the Trinity River. If I think it's you know, a quality place at the time for these gar. If not, I do fish in South Texas more often.
You're telling me that you take 200 trips. You probably, let's say, you average one gar a trip. Well,
sure.
According to Texas Parks and Wildlife, that's half of the quota that they want harvested every year, which is around 400.
Oh, really? Now that's the first I heard as far as actually looking at and only a certain amount of gar to be harvested.
Well, yeah, and that's just in that one specific stretch of the Trinity River where they estimate, you know, there's about 9,600 fish. So if your clients are taking 200 of the allotted 400 that they see as the ideal or the maximum harvest rate, you can see why that seems like a lot, unless you're telling me there are more than 9,600 alligator gar in that 300 or 400 mile stretch of the river.
Oh, I don't. Actually, even in their own notes, I did read some studies they did. They actually showed that as far as sustainable harvest, it's up to 5%, I think, is a sustainable harvest. And Trinity River's getting hammered the most, and they're only taking 3 to 4% of the gar out of that river. Everything else is everything. The only other studies they've done, I think, are on, I think maybe the Brazos and Falcon Lake, I believe, or Choke Canyon. I'm not real sure, but the percentage of harvest over there sustainable was only 2%. It's well under what they think sustainable is, and they still want to change the regulations. I think they're going off emotion and not the only facts that are right in front of them. That's very frustrating. And not to mention this, there are so many places where these gar are at. That people can't even get to. There's so many even stretches of the Trinity for miles that you can't get a boat on, or unless you've got an airboat, you're going to spend so much fuel, money, and fuel and gas to get to these spots because there's so many miles away from the next boat ramp or between boat ramps. And not to mention the Brazos River. The Brazos River's got a ton of gar on, and you can't. Oh my gosh, I don't think. I'd say probably 70 or 80% of that river is not even accessible because of lack of boat ramps and the shallowness that it gets in the summertime. There's no boat ramps. You can't hardly get anywhere on that river.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of the banks are so tall, you can't launch a boat from them. So it's pretty inaccessible. And the Brazos is full of them. Not to mention all the gar that are down these rivers that dump into the bay systems. That these gar at the people really aren't even messing with them really because they're down there catching trout and redfish and flounder and whatever else, you know, drum, sheephead. They're not even interested in these gar. And all these rivers, not too many people even jack with them down there. And it's salt, fresh, and brackish water areas. Matter of fact, I'd say probably every river that dumps into the Texas coastline has a ton of gar in them. But you just got to figure out how to access them and get into those areas.
Right.
And they're not being accessed. I mean, these gar are in so many places that people don't even jack with them. It's absurd that the Texas Parks and Wildlife wants to change the rules.
Well, and you know, I'm just here to present both sides of the story. And like Tony said earlier, though, in 2009, TPWD changed the regs so that you could only keep one alligator gar per day. And begrudgingly, I mean, y'all accommodated. And now here we are 5 years later, and they're changing the rules again. And I'm sure from y'all's stance, that's pretty frustrating.
Yes, it's quite aggravating. I mean, they changed the carp on us, and thank goodness that didn't spread to other problems. As far as the tank carp out of Lake Austin there in Austin, then they changed the rule to one alligator gar per day, and that was fair and reasonable. And but this, if they're going to change this, this is absurd. It really, truly is. I don't understand their reasoning behind this. I would never try to take a species if I thought it was endangered. I would not. I have no concern to take a species to the brink of extinction.
Well, yeah, and as a hunter and an angler and conservationist, of course you don't want to do that, and that's respectable. And I guess the general sentiment is just that the bow fishing community feels that there are way more alligator gar here in Texas than what Texas Parks and Wildlife estimates, and while they're being proactive, and maybe their intentions are good, they're not hearing what you guys are saying, and that's what is so frustrating.
I think they're more going off of emotion than actual science. To my knowledge, the only two places they've been tagging alligator gar is on the Trinity River and Choke Canyon, which is in southwest Texas. Full alligator gar, a lot of big ones. They never talk to us fishermen. They really don't. We helped them a little bit as much as they asked us to a few years ago, but they never really just, you know, what we do, we were just turning in, you know, samples, but they never really asked us much about numbers or anything else. They never have. It was just what we helped them with is what they asked us for, but it wasn't. They never really asked us questions about what we thought. They never did. And I just find that so aggravating.
Well, Captain Mark, like we said, you're very respected within the bow fishing community here in Texas. You're out on the water as much as, if not more, than just about anyone. And folks can visit your website if they want to book a trip at bigfishbowfishingtexas.com.
I offer both rod and reel fishing, giant alligator gar, as well as bow fishing form, and I do alligator hunts as well in the month of September.
Thanks again for your time this morning. We certainly appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
So there he goes, Captain Mark Malfa. And I tell you what, it's been fascinating covering this alligator gar fishery over the last couple weeks. And we will continue to monitor that situation, see if Texas Parks and Wildlife does indeed pass those proposed regulation changes that would affect alligator gar harvest during spawning conditions. So we'll keep you abreast on the latest with that situation. Thanks to Captain Mark, as well as our other guest today, Tony Reeves. Of course, John Jackson of the Conservation Force, and our good buddy and whitetail biologist, Jason Shipman. Thanks to all of our sponsors for making this show possible. Thanks to you, the listener, for being a part of the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoors show as we celebrate Texas independence this weekend. Until next time, I'm Cable Smith saying God bless Texas, and y'all have a great week in the outdoors.
If this call is neglected, I am determined to sustain myself as long as possible. As long as possible. And die like a soldier who never forgets what is due to his honor and that of his country. Victory or death. William Barrett Travis.